This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Good morning. Hello. This is Talking Devils, the leading independent Manchester United podcast. I'm your host, Wayne Barton, joined, as you can see, by Manchester United legend Paul Parker and living legend Dave Murphy to talk over a difficult weekend for the club, a difficult week for the club, really. We're streaming on three platforms. We are live on YouTube and Facebook. If you're watching live on those platforms, get your comments and questions in. If you're watching live on the replay as well, say hello to the comment. We do reply to the comments that we get. If you're listening back to the audio podcast, be sure to like, subscribe on the platform you're listening on. And if you're watching us live on Twitter, which is streaming on my profile page, then if you put some comments in underneath the tweet, I'll try and get to them if I can. I'm still figuring out how to do that, as it's, you know, streaming live through Twitter, but we'll see how we get on with that. I'll start off with asking, Paul, how was your weekend? How were you, mate?
Weekend was, well, as I think everyone knows, I mean, the majority knows that I would have had, got ruined a little bit by what happened in the late afternoon Saturday. And I was at the London Derby, West Ham v Chelsea, yesterday afternoon, which was a lot nicer to watch than what it was watching United on Saturday evening.
I don't know what you're talking about, because as far as I'm concerned, I was watching reruns of our classic games at Spurs, so I can't imagine anything went horribly wrong. Lads, it's United, as Roy Keane might have rephrased us afterwards. Dave, how are you getting on? You all right?
Yeah, not too bad. Blanked out Saturday, so my weekend consisted just of Sunday. Some family time, and it didn't rain here in Ireland, so we've had our summer. So that's what I spent my weekend having my summer. So
good. Well, we'll get to unfortunately the game that neither of you want to talk about, neither do I really. I'll tell you what I did on Sunday, actually, because I am. This is not going to surprise anyone watching this, and neither are you two. Dave, you already know, but on Sunday morning, I decided, I was so wallowing in my self-pity about United losing that I decided to indulge in United history like I usually do. I took a tour around northeast Manchester to the old stomping grounds of when we were new and east. So and it just after turning the corner and becoming United as well. So the areas of land that were formerly North Road and Bank Street, the old stadiums there where they've got the plaques up in. But there's one for Bank Street, there's a plaque on a house, but the North Road one is on an industrial estate next to a police station, and I think it's Fujifilm. And some guy actually put the plaque there himself. It's not an official plaque, but it's there, it's publicly accessible. So I went to see them. And also, it's either Ceylon Street or Ceylon Street, I don't know, it begins with C. And we went there, and the area of land, really weird. If you're in Manchester, go and see it anyway. So it's an area of land adjacent to the railway, the old offices and sort of workshops that were there where New and Heath workers sort of first congregated to play football matches on this patch of, it's basically just a playing field, which they put some goalposts on, I guess, and played their first disorganised games before they moved to North Broad in 1880. And Bellway have built a little housing estate on there now, and they are very suspicious individuals living in those houses. If you go around with a camera, they didn't like my presence. But there's also like a patch of wasteland, and it's probably been built on and then it's become wasteland again. But it's nice to think that there's a little area of greenery where the very first Newton Heath players played. It still exists, it's still there, you can walk on it if you wanted to take a ball and kick it around and pretend you were one of the forefathers. 150 years on, you can do that. That's how I spent my Sunday morning. Now we rewind, fast forward to present day, where we're talking about Manchester United in crisis, or not, as Johnny says in the comments. He says, morning, Wayne, Paul and Dave. I don't think United are in crisis. Only two games in. We started the same last season. I probably sensationalised headline for the podcast. I appreciate that and apologise for it as well. But I'm talking about overall the club's state that it's in at the moment. Is it a state of emergency? And I don't think it's a stretch to say that it is. There's so many things going on. Get to the other stuff in a moment, but we will start off with what happened at Spurs. It has been a quite underwhelming start to the season. It wasn't the greatest performance against Wolves either. These things happen, though, and I'm speaking just for myself here. When you win 1-0, it's unconvincing. But I justify it with the fact that we won a game, and you hope that what didn't work in that game corrects itself the weekend. Maybe I think I've just become so indoctrinated in doing that under Moyes and Van Gaal and Mourinho in particular, where you just say, as long as we win, it doesn't matter how we play. And it really does. It's really starting to matter how we play. And Paul, I know you've been a big advocate for that. We did get away with it against Wolves. I thought it can't be worse than that. Unfortunately, it was. Spurs weren't brilliant, but they were better than us. We were okay in the first half, but we looked concerningly disjointed. We've invested heavily in that midfield and the defence at the base level. Yeah, all right, sometimes you're going to get flat performances, but I think supporters have got a right to demand or expect more than the sort of nothing reactions that we've seen too many times. And, you know, in the past year, it's been Maguire or De Gea or McTominay and Fred or Martial. And you say, okay, well, those players are there. It's a work in progress. And you can understand why the performance has lurched from high to low. But none of those players are in the side anymore. And now, I'm not pointing the finger, but you're looking at the players of like the likes of the players who were there before, like Fernandes, like Rashford, like Shaw. And you're saying these are big seasons for these players who have to step up. They really have a necessity to prove themselves immediately. They have to prove that they're United elite quality, and they were being held back by the other players, and they were all disappointing Saturday. All it was an all-round team performance that was poor. I thought we were okay in the first half, but you do want to see some kind of reaction to going behind, and we didn't see that in the second half. It was really really poor. It was a team who seemed to accept defeat from the minute they went behind, instead of looking how much of the game was in front of them. And, you know, picked themselves up and went 2-0 down. Two very bad goals to concede. Paul, there were some post-match complaints about the first half penalty show. For me, I think it's obvious it should have been a penalty. And it did feel like we were getting one back for what happened on Monday with Onana. But when you look at the game as a whole, and yeah, all right, we had more shots in the first half and we looked fairly in control. But a game's 90 minutes and the performance in the second half, we didn't deserve anything from that, did we?
No, the even the first half performance wasn't great. It's just that Spurs are definitely, in my opinion, they're gonna get better under their present coach, without a doubt. I think there'll be more unity with the team, and the fact of their midfield was more fluid than what United's were says a lot, really. And the fact of he resurrected it by leaving out Oliver Skip, and now he's got in a rejuvenated Zuma. At one point, everyone thought it must be a Brighton thing. You leave Brighton and you lose everything. Basuma's just blossomed. So has Pape Sarr as well, another one who struggled under that Conte era. But United are okay. Fernandes should have hit the target, as an easier thing to say, but he should have done. A player of his quality should have hit the target, should have scored with his head. You mentioned about the penalty, Wayne. I see it differently, to be perfectly honest, as a defender. If I'm going to rush out, and just in my head, I've got to go and block. I've sensed danger. I've got to go and block. I'm going to go and block. I'm not going to get in my head in that kind of split second that when, as I'm going to block, to tell myself, oh my God, got to put my hands behind my back and then go out. Because as I run out like that with my arms behind my back, the ball might get shifted again. I've got nothing to change my direction with. I can dip my shoulder, but there's every chance I'm going to fall over and maybe dislocate my shoulder. So when I run out naturally, I'm going to run out. And as soon as I see the block, whatever I put in first, my arm is going towards that way as well. So my arm's going to be out. And we're talking about the one now. If it hit that one up there, you can have an argument about that. But when someone is there, I'm kind of going, well, that's part of the movement. You can't do it like that. You're going to block. So somehow, then something needs to be worked out about this. All of a sudden, oh, you're making your body wide. No, you're getting your body in the position to keep your balance. Otherwise, you will fall over. So if I did the ball and I said to someone, throw the ball to me, and I'm going to have someone right in front of me, and as that ball's being thrown, they step towards me, and then they've got to put their arms behind their back, I would go past them 9 times out of 10. Because they've got no balance. They'll end up having to foul me or something because they can't recorrect themselves. So as far as I'm concerned, it's not a penalty. You can't, if you give that, you've got to turn around and say, anytime the ball hits your hand in the box, it's a penalty. That's the only way it can be, Wayne, if we're going to do it that way. And that's me saying it as an old school defender and absolutely hating this modern day defending, hating it because it's non-existent. That would lead me towards the goal. But if we're talking about the first half, it was okay. The second half was just like the second half last season, wasn't it? Came out second half and was absolutely just like, it was just like a damp squib, really, to be perfectly honest, the way they played. There was nothing there, no energy, no belief to win. I think that's the wrong. There was no ambition. Everyone seemed bothered. It was like, oh, let's get this season over as quick as possible kind of attitude, Wayne. And I just didn't see anything. And the worst thing for me was that I wish I was sitting at home watching it where I could have just said really what I felt about it. But when you're on the radio to the whole of, you know, out to America and out to Africa, you have to hold yourself back a little bit. But I was totally frustrated in what I was seeing, which was the lack of effort. And you mentioned a few players there. You know, but I look at Luke Shaw, who's gone like that and gone like that, then gone bang, then gone, let himself down again, then finished the season well. And then all of a sudden, I watched that second half performance and I don't know, someone's got to tell me about him. What is it about? Because that first goal, was he talking to Garnacho? I don't think he was, because Garnacho just went chasing into the wrong area. And then you look on the other side, why was he so narrow? And why did he not make one effort to go out towards the ball? And then to ask the player, what are you going to do next? The player's running a straight line. Luke Shaw's running in a straight line toward, you know, parallel with the near post, running towards the near post, not to cut the angle off, but just run two players running in a straight line. And then the ball comes in. And then Luke Shaw's just looked at it and kind of gone like, and then turned and walked away. No frustration, nothing at all. No one has had a go at Luke Shaw for the fact of being lazy, being in the wrong position, not talking to Garnacho. Garnacho goes and stands in the hole. The player doesn't run. But because Garnacho's just stepped forward, you know, he's a young player. You can't dig him out for that. It's just absolutely just pure laziness on Luke Shaw's part. And it's the usual suspects, really, in certain ways. I mean, I'm going to say a player, and I don't care where he plays, but the one thing you do is when you play football, which is not written in stone, It's not in a contract, but it should be within you, within yourself, is to work hard for your teammates. Marcus Rashford works hard for when he's ready to, for when he's to do his little bit, which is to get the ball and dribble, give away possession, go down on the floor holding something, or just to stand there, look up, and then just walk back. Poor. Really, really poor. People can talk about goals, but I've played with players that have, you know, they've not had that kind of, maybe that kind of ability, what he's got, which he doesn't really use. But the one thing they do is work hard for their teammates. And if they don't, a teammate will tell them, I don't see anybody asking him to chase back. So you've lost a player when you haven't got a ball. And then you're asking Mason Mount to chase around and close people down on his own. Even Fernandes has stopped doing it in that way as well. So the long and short of it, I am seeing again what I've seen over the last few seasons. And to cap it all, again, Manchester United, they give out a contract again to Marcus Rashford based on one season. Yeah. It should have been, everything should have been talked about. Well, no, we can give you that, but so-and-so. And if you go on this season, go and do it again. Because when you're with a top club and you're meant to be a top player, consistency comes with both of them. And you're not seeing that in Marcus Rashford. You're not seeing it in Manchester United. And you're definitely not seeing it in Marcus Rashford. It's consistency. If he scored a goal on Saturday, everyone would have said, great, he's done this and done that. But those bits in between are massive. He's just papering over cracks with goals. No goals, people say something. But if there's a goal, everyone's on the top of it, on top of it. And so I still wonder, when Højlund is fit and he does play, and I'm looking forward to, I think everyone is, can Marcus Rashford produce more on the left side? And when I say more, I mean a work ethic. Because I wouldn't want to see, they keep showing these heat maps. I would love to see one of Marcus Rashford, to be perfectly honest, because I'll get more heat from a Swan Vesta at this moment in time.
Okay, so a couple of comments from Johnny. He says, respectfully, Paul, that's the law of the game at the moment. As such, was a penalty. I agree with you. The rules at the moment are awful. The handball rule needs to be seriously looking at. He agrees with Paul about Rashford. It beggars belief that players aren't breaking the necks to get back and help defend. It's the basic. It's what you do as a kid playing. It's on the local park. Chase it back should be the minimum for a professional footballer. Dave, a lot to unpack from what Paul was saying. I mean, I agree with what you're saying with the body being in a natural position. When I'm saying that, I think it should be a penalty. I don't mean like meant to deliberately, but I just think that the ball, sometimes defenders don't mean to do it, but the handball stopped the ball from perhaps, it probably wasn't going in, but it stopped it on its journey towards the goal. And in that situation, unfortunately, for him, fortunately for United, although it wasn't because we didn't get it, we should have got it. But the wider point is really not really to do with a penalty, because I don't think any of us are going to sit here and say, all right, it could have altered the pattern of the game. But really, overall, from what we saw, United didn't deserve the result. And the problems that United have got, they extend far beyond the penalty is not the reason why we didn't get the game. The win is because you look at the poor individual performances and the poor collective performance. And I think for me, we're saying Shaw and Rashford, but talking about these two players in particular, because they've had such highs and such lows, and they've started the season in fairly low form, and it's concerning to see that. I think for me, regarding the individuals and then regarding the team, is that we've seen a few of these performances when, you know, like at the back end, at the start of last season, we all remember this time last year after two games, that was the crisis. We got battered by Brentford, and Ten Hag brings them all in, and they all go on a run, and then the spirit is changed, and then for the next sort of half a dozen games, they realise that it's the level of intensity needs to be there for every single game for United. And you thought that the message had got home, but then when you see that should be the bare principle, the first thing that you see from a United team, and we didn't see that again on Saturday, is it too soon to say Ten Hag should have had his finger on the pulse of this? What do you make of what you saw on Saturday?
Well, initially, you know, I want to just go back to the penalty. For me, it was a definite penalty if you go with the letter of the law today. But that said, you know, Paul makes a very, very valid point that later on in the game, there was a shot by Spurs, and in the slow motion, you could see Martinez hands behind the back. You know, that's what they're taught to do now. But the one thing I never thought of was the point that Paul just made, that when you're coming out at that angle, you can't put your hands behind your back in that situation because you're going to fall on the ground and look like a fool, you know. So he's right there. But if we go with the letter of the law, he did make himself bigger, and it was a handball. I think the problem is the rule. The rule is it doesn't. I know every rule can't fit every scenario, but this one is a bit. This one is one that I think that needs to be re-looked at. Making yourself bigger as a player, and then it becomes a penalty. That is the letter of the law today. So for me, it was a penalty, but it kind of doesn't make sense in situations like that, because if it was United and the penalty was given, and then we're on the show today, and Paul's like, I think it's a stupid penalty because, you know, when you're coming out at that angle, you're trying to close down, you're not standing up straight, you can't put your hands behind your back. I'd be sitting here fuming then, going, oh my God, it wasn't a penalty then, that, you know, that law needs to be changed. I do believe the law needs to be changed. I really do. There's a few of them that need to be changed, but that one in particular, it's just so inconsistent. That's the problem. It's so inconsistent. Trust me, that'll be given throughout the season in other games, that penalty. And United may get one as well based off that. And that's the problem that I have, is that there's just these rules. It should be black and white. It's either a penalty or it's not. It's either a free kick or it's not. It should be made very, very easy for the referees to make that decision. But it's not. But onto United, it was abysmal. I think the first 20, 25 minutes we did okay. I do believe that Spurs were starting to get into it at that point. Second half, we were non-existent. You know, I was more than happy when we signed Mason Mount. But it looks like so far he's our Van de Beek. It looks like he's a very, very good player that became available. And maybe, you know, we jumped in too soon and bought him, and he doesn't fit into the jigsaw. Because when him and Fernandez play, and we've only seen them in two real games, it's very disjointed. Neither of them know what they're supposed to be doing. Marcus Rashford, for me, is not a centre forward. I think we get the best out of him on the left. I don't even think he, you know, I read an article a couple of weeks back, Marcus Rashford, where he was saying that he's not always a big fan of playing centre forward because he wants to be more involved in the game. I mean, if out on the wing, he seems to be more involved in the game. But centre forward, I just don't think he's a centre forward right now. I think he should be out on the left. But we have the situation with Garnacho. You know, if he goes out on the left, he's going to drop him. So does that, you know, stop his progress? It's a bizarre situation for Ten Hag to be in. But honestly, I don't think Marcus Rashford is playing his best football when he's playing through the middle. And there is definitely something lacking there when he plays there. And I think the sooner we get Hoyland fit, the sooner we can push him back out onto the left. Yes, Garnacho is probably going to be the odd man out. But I think our biggest problem is in midfield. I think Mason Mount just runs around, and I don't think he knows what he's doing, what he has to do. I don't think the instructions are clear to him. He just seems to be running around all the time. Now, you know, we have some other players which we wish would run more, but he doesn't seem to be running with any, you know, any guidance or anything. And although we are 3 points better off than we were at the start of last season, I'm not overly concerned right now. It's very early in the season. And the reason I'm not overly concerned is that, and you know, out of all three of us, Paul can definitely understand this. You know, when teams play Manchester United, they play it at a different level. I mean, Wolves came to Old Trafford last week and they looked like prime, you know, Brazil. And then yesterday, the weekend, they got absolutely tonked. I watched the Tottenham game last week against Brentford. They weren't that great. They really weren't. But yesterday in the second half, it was a completely different team. So that has to be also built into the fact that teams do raise their games. But as a Manchester United player, you should know that by now. You should know that a lot of clubs, and this is no disrespect to them, but a lot of clubs taking 3 points off Manchester United is in a lot of ways their semi-final, their FA Cup final, whatever you want to call it. It's their big game that season. And a lot of teams tend to build their season based off beating Manchester United. And some teams use it as a springboard to improve and give themselves that extra confidence. But the Wolves factor, you know, proved to me that Manchester United is still the big show around. You know, they're still the big ticket. And teams are going to raise themselves against them. But a lot of these players need to start realizing that again, that when teams come to Old Trafford or when you go to their stadium, they're gonna put in an extra 10, 20, you know, 50%. And I use Wolves as a prime example. You know, Wolves came and they should have beaten us last week, like by a couple of goals, easily. And then they got absolutely tonked at home. So I just think that we really need to sort out our midfield. We need to find out who our best midfield is. And once we do that, I think we'll start to click on. But I think Marcus Rashford was really, really poor in his first two games. And I think he definitely needs to be moved out left.
Johnny says, I saw some clips on Twitter yesterday. It shows how midfield is used to be expected to be good going forward. Defending Robbo, Ince, etc. So Bruno and Mount should be able to do that too, right? Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. People have become specialists and not all-rounders, whereas midfielders used to be that. They would be the all-rounders. They'd be the better players because they basically dictating the flow of the game, and that's still their purpose. That's their primary position. And you see the best midfielders generally can do all of those things. Like Declan Rice is a great example of someone who can do mostly. All right, maybe he's not a great creator, but he's great in all other areas of the game. And United do have those kind of problems at the moment. You're probably right with Mount. I feel a bit sorry for him. He's obviously looked very frustrated when he's come off in the games. I think he came off in both games, hasn't he? When United were struggling to sort of get to terms with it, and he's looked frustrated with that. And it is a bit of a confusing one because he was Ten Hag's primary target. So you would have thought that because he was the target and the way that the midfield should be set up, it should be perfectly oiled, and it's not. It looks very disjointed. And that leads me into the sort of topic of at the top of the on the title on the podcast is United in crisis. Look, I mean, I don't want to put that impression across that United, in terms of performance, it's a crisis because these are creaks, you know, that Ten Hag will have to deal with. And, you know, obviously that's a process. I would have expected some of them to be dealt with a bit quicker with a lot of investment, like the midfielder. Don't expect to see it looking as unfamiliar as it did or as it has done in the first two games, especially because Mount was brought in fairly early on as well. But when I'm talking about crisis, I'm talking about the entire mood around the club at the moment, which is accentuated by the poor performances. And, you know, I think that there are so many big things that are going on with the club at the moment that it's a kind of a dark period. Like, you've got takeover, which is now stalled with no resolution and more pertinently, no communication as to that lack of resolution. Like, we can take no resolution, but I think the lack of communication is very concerning, that we should have some kind of clarity of what's going on. The Mason Greenwood case, I'm deliberately not talking about this on the podcast. It is looming large over the club. There can be no denying that. It's a massive story that was rumbling all last week. The reason I'm not putting anyone here in the position to talk about it is because there's no resolution to that, and I don't think it does anybody any favours to speculate over that. So I know people will listen to this and expect us to give an opinion. I don't feel comfortable putting other people in that position. I will say that both of those issues, the takeover and the Greenwood thing, they do need resolving. They need resolving swiftly, sooner rather than later, in terms of how it's going to help the club move forward. A takeover isn't going to happen before the end of the transfer window, which means the club will be looking at reinvesting the income that they get from outgoing transfers. And I think the thing that is probably fair to talk about is that sort of the transfer activity that's going to be needed in this next 2 weeks, because, yeah, all right, we're talking about Brentford last year and how we reached a crisis point after two games. You know, we haven't had that in terms of performance. I don't think it's been that bad, but it's nonetheless concerning. And you look over the year, Ten Hag had two major things to deal with. He had that start where he had to sort of really address the squad and tell them about the standards. Then there was the Ronaldo incident, and both of those things he's dealt with really successfully, or he's been allowed to manage really successfully. And now we're at another moment in time, and obviously there are a couple of things that he's not in control of, like the takeover, and he obviously has some input in the Greenwood thing, but these things need to be resolved in a way that, as the manager backed and has been looking strong, and in this short-term period of time, I still feel like maybe in terms of the squad building, one or two players short, and it's difficult to see how we navigate that period without the turnover in the transfer market. So you're looking at the likes of Maguire and McTominay, who've been linked with a move to West Ham, completing that transfer and maybe bringing in 50 million. Martial linked with a move to the Saudi League, and hopefully that will bring in some money as well. So that might free up, like, I don't know, £60 million or something. But then you're worried about the long-term nature of the targets. I mean, Amrabat's been the one who's been mentioned all summer, and he's available for, I think they said, about £30 million. Maybe there's someone completely different to when we started the season last season. Everyone was talking about De Jong. Casemiro wasn't even mentioned. Do you think, Paul, I mean, and the way that I've just, you know, we've talked about this, and we've talked about Ten Hag having got the players that he wanted for midfield, in terms of he wanted Casemiro, he got him. I know he wanted De Jong, but he wanted Mount, and he's obviously got him to fit that role. So is it concerning that we are at this stage in the window saying,
and there it is, that's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
We are going to need one to two panic signings. Not panic signings in terms of the panic, but one that they were the last priorities. They weren't players that we were desperate to bring in. And now we are desperate for them in order for the form to have some kind of kickstart to it. Is that a concern to you, or do you think that it's a bit of I'm getting a little bit overreacting because of the form?
I don't think you're overreacting. I mean, yes, it's only two games, but I still think there has to be a reaction to it. You can't just, you know, being United, you always have to hit the ground running. People expect that. If you don't hit the ground running, then straight away you're getting what you are now. It's as simple as that. So, and people always talk about what last season and the change that happened there. Well, that's not going to happen again that way. You know, that moment has gone, and at the moment United have been a kind of a moments kind of team in certain ways. So when it comes to it now, I look at Mason Mount, and Mason Mount's kind of name was all about the fact of he come through the ranks at Chelsea. That's what it was about, and everything around him at Chelsea was all about that. You talked to him about Mason Mount. A lot of Chelsea fans, they wouldn't say much different to what I've just said. But his strength is the fact of he's willing to run. He's willing to work hard. So I think rather than trying to keep him a little bit back, a little bit deep, where, you know, which isn't his role. If you watch him when he played at Chelsea, he was always running into the box, always going into the box. He was playing off of somebody. So maybe, again, I mentioned it, is that if Højlund, when he's fit, then that might be that one, that kind of second man run off of the centre forward to take maybe a player away from Højlund and vice versa, to get someone who's looking more consistently to run through, rather than seeing when before we saw a lot of Fernandes doing that. Mason Mount has got a little bit more extra pace than Fernandes. He's got more energy than Fernandes in that way because of more his desire to keep running. Because as we know, running is not about really how, you know, it's about how far you want to run, rather than, you know, how far you can run. Because we all can run, but the problem is how far do we want to run, and now we're going to push ourselves harder. Mason Mount will always push through. So the problem at the moment, where last season there was a side that midfield was better than what it has been for a long, long while. Last season it was great. And then you see the injury to Eriksen, then you see that little spell where Casemiro was getting a little bit when he was getting the piss taken out of him by referees. Really, in theory, how it worked out with Casemiro. So those two, you lost Eriksen for quite a while, then over a longer period of time, and Casemiro was in, and then when he come back, he was fighting to get back in again. So lost a bit of cohesion there. The team lost cohesion as well because of then Varane got out injured, and then by the time he come back and they got together again, Martinez. Do we say this? It's Martinez, isn't it?
Yeah, Martinez.
Right, thank you for that. Yeah, that's another story from weekend. So he gets injured at the back end of the season, and then you see how much he's missed. So the strength of United last season was the two centre-halves, Casemiro and Eriksen. They were the main, those two together with Fernandes. You had Casemiro, the way he held and the way he settled everyone down. You had his movement into the box to score important headers, or going in there to take people away because everyone come wary of him. You had Fernandes, who found a bit of space, and then you had a player, Eriksen, who could find people, control the game in midfield. United had a little bit of ball retention in midfield, which they never had for a long period of time after Sir Alex retired. Now it started this season. It's been disjointed on the fact of Mount has come in. Eriksen, he's tried to bring Eriksen on. Eriksen can't get into games that way. He can't do it. He needs to get on and start games so he can get his second breath earlier, and then he maybe be able to get the ball and get some kind of something going in midfield, because the midfield hasn't linked at all in two games.
Yeah.
You know, people talk about, oh, well, it's pre-season and there's, you know, it's too early. Well, pre-season is meant to iron out all that stuff. It doesn't seem it's ironed out anything. It seems like me, it was a PR exercise just to go and play games, throw different bodies out there and go and play Premier League games in different parts of the world, which doesn't make sense, in my opinion. Why go and do that? Stay close at home, get more games in, maybe get more just different kind of games in, rather than just going to play. You end up playing practice games, making a load of substitutions because you don't want to show your cards too early. And that's all it was, pre-season, for majority of the Premier League sides, really. That's all they've done. United have suffered, in my opinion, because they've lost a great strength from that midfield. And now Ten Hag has got to think about how is he going to improve it, because he's virtually starting again the back four. Now he's got to try and get the back four playing together. You had Varane at the start of the season moaning about games, which is ridiculous, because you know, it's like going out onto a football pitch with a great big bandage around your knee and virtually saying, look at me, I'm injured, but I'm playing. There you are, everyone goes, bang, there's your knee gone. Come out, in your head you're going, that lad's mentally weak already. Yeah. And then you've got Luke Shaw, who, don't know, who might need Malacia to get fit to get him going again at this moment in time. You've got Wan-Bissaka trying to find his feet again to get back to the way he finished the season. So, you know, that bit in the back four. And then you've got the problems of reigniting the midfield again, which might just need purchase of another midfield player. And you mentioned one earlier, which has got energy levels. And I've seen that in a World Cup live when I was out there. And I've seen that when I watched him play for Fiorentina against West Ham And he's one time I've seen him play, and I'm seeing exactly the same I saw play for his national team. And the front three for Manchester United from last season is still a waste of time. No consistency at all. No consistency. I was given that I wanted to give the benefit of doubt to Anthony. I thought I was going to see something. I thought I was seeing little bits of it against Wolves. I saw some good bits, but then everything's come out in the wash at, you know, at Tottenham Stadium, you know, /White Hart Lane.
Yeah, it wasn't great. And that makes a really good point here about the front line. I think it does seem to be a bit of an issue at the moment. Ball retention, he says. Not sure if anyone's commented on it, but the first two games, the front four have lost the ball 150 times. That, to me, appears to be a big on-field issue. They play well, United win. They turn over the ball often, and we have what we've seen in those two games. Dave, it's a good point. Moving into talking about Forest. Against Forest, it's kind of like, I don't want to be too disrespectful because they've started the season well. You know, Alanga did well for Forest Arsenal. I think it helped the goal for them, and they won the first game, the first home game against Sheffield United. So it doesn't seem quite as manic as it did last summer. So they might benefit from a bit of stability in the end of the season quite well. They've got a couple of important wins. They'll still draft as a 3-8, but we've seen that liberate teams. And United can see Ten Hag. In normal times, you might think that you'd have a question over, let's say, starting Højlund. He might want to do that anyway to sort of get him some minutes, and he might, you know, might be a bit rusty, but Forrest might seem like a good game to bring him in. But then he might be tempted to just stick with Rashford, Antony, and Garnacho to not want to drop them, you know, to not want to drop, to be seen to be dropping Mount as well, rather than what Paul says, you're probably better off in this moment in time starting with Eriksen and introducing Mount into a winning team. You might be better off putting Mount on the right because Anthony's not playing great. But then it's a, you know, Garnacho's not particularly playing great. The pressure was there at the back end of last season because he was injured, and it was like, bring him in and hopefully he'll make a difference. It still seems to me, particularly from the first couple of games, that he's a better impact player. I've seen the sense in bringing Sancho on in both of those games, actually, and on reflection in both those games, thinking maybe it would have been better if Sancho had started and we brought Garnacho on. It's a difficult one. I mean, the Forest, again, without wanting to be condescending to them, it seems like a straightforward result on paper for United. But it does have these complications of what to do with the squad, doesn't it? Like, it's a tricky one for Ten Hag to sort of get through, especially when he's got to try and pull a message that these first two performances have just not been good enough.
Yeah, I think the one thing that we do have in Ten Hag that we didn't have in a lot of previous managers, other than maybe Van Gaal and at times Mourinho, is that I think Ten Hag is his own man. I think he... If he feels you're not doing it, you're not doing it. No one is undroppable. We've seen that with the whole Ronaldo situation. We've seen it throughout the last year as well with players. He needs to make a decision on Mason Mount, and I think he's the type of manager that it doesn't play on his mind that he spent a lot of money on Mason Mount to bring him in. It needs to be tweaked, you know, and he's the manager of one of the biggest clubs in the world, and that's what he's paid very, very handsomely to do. I don't think Ten Hag has a problem with dropping players, and I think the time is right to do that because he has an opportunity here because he's taken Mason Mount off in the last two games. That kind of normally leads to a situation whereby you have not an excuse, but you have an opportunity to actually drop the player without it being a big, massive thing. I mean, if he hadn't taken Mason Mount off in the last two games and then he drops him against, you know, Forest, well, then you'd be like, oh, what the hell's going on here? Mm-hmm. This is an ideal opportunity for him to go. It ain't working yet. We're not saying that it's never going to work, but right now we need to tweak things. And I think if Højlund is fit, we need to be brave and start him and put Marcus Rashford back out on the left because Garnacho hasn't really been doing much out there. And maybe he... You know, for me, Garnacho was always an impact player. That's when he seems to have played his best. Is that, you know, enough to keep him satisfied? Is that enough to progress his progress in the team? I'm not too sure, but right now it's not working and we can't work on what ifs. We definitely need to bring Eriksen in. You know, when Eriksen came on the other day, he was the only one that was actually trying something. You know, I'll give kudos to Bruno Fernandes for trying and trying and trying. But at some point, he has to realize that maybe I shouldn't try that Hollywood pass every single time. Maybe I shouldn't try it. Maybe you should try the simpler ball and go from there. But I don't believe Mason Mount needs to be taken out of the team. I think Eriksen needs to come in. We've got a lot of good players on the bench that can come in, you know, as impact players. And that's what we should be using them at right now. I mean, we go back to, you know, our most famous impact player, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. You know, Ferguson used him so well. Knew when he had to start him, knew when he had to bring him on as a sub. We have a couple of players in our team that I feel that, you know, can play that role right now. But the other thing I wanted to mention that wasn't brought up yet, and maybe you're going to bring it up, was, you know, Onana. I thought he was absolutely fantastic on Saturday. His distribution, his just all-around confidence. I'm just hoping that starts to, you know, ooze out into the back four, because we are still a little bit jittery at the back. But, you know, that pass, that diagonal pass that he sent out to Garnaccio, I mean, come on. Any other goalkeeper, it would have been on a loop for the whole weekend on most of their social media platforms, but it wasn't. But that, to me, was like, okay, this guy has, you know, his balls are steel. He's not afraid to try anything. But like we've said, this is going to cause us, you know, major anxiety throughout the season. But he's a player that's just come in and, you know, as you know, Paul can testify, coming into Manchester United is not the easiest thing in the world. But some players embrace it. You know, they come and they embrace it. To me, he has. He just seems to have all the confidence in the world. And I know goalkeepers are at times a little bit out there. But this guy has come in and he's done absolutely fantastic. If you get the preseason issues, you know, that's where you iron out those problems. I thought he was actually fantastic on Saturday. I do believe that we do need to, you know, to go back to the initial point. I think Mount needs to be taken out. Dan did bring up that point there where we've given away the ball over 150 times our front three in the first two games. That's a damning statistic. It really is. And I'm a big Marcus Rashford fan, but I wouldn't be surprised if 70-80% of that was through him. I just don't think he feels comfortable as a centre forward. I really don't. I think he prefers to be out on the left, and it's shown. I mean, Paul, I don't like to always, you know, go backwards to, you know, when times are good at United, but have you ever been in a situation whereby after two games, your front three have given the ball away 150 times?
No, I was quite fortunate. When I was at United, there was a lot of good players in front of me. In fact, there was an incredible amount of great players in front of me. You know, the front, if you talk about front six, because you look at it that way, the four across the midfield and the two up front was incredible. You know, and everyone was up and back. You know, it was as simple as that. And it wasn't a case of we practiced that. It was a case of it was just there. It was in your DNA to go and do that. But to give the ball away that many times, if we're talking about the modern game, then that's horrific, really. The game back then in the day was a different kind of game to in that way it was played. It wasn't so much about ball retention. It was getting the ball forward as quick as possible to your best players. It was as simple as that. It was said, the boss said it, whenever, if Eric calls for the ball, you give it to him. It's as simple as that. It's quite simple, really. Get the ball to your best players as quick as possible. And even more importantly, make sure you give the ball to them the same way you would expect them to give it to you. And that's job done. In today's game, it's relatively quite easy because that's the way everyone now is playing in the same fashion. In that way, not always exciting, but everyone is trying to play in that same fashion. But United have not started it well this season. Had a great period of time over a big span during last season. Lost a little bit at the end of it, but haven't started right this season. That's the annoying thing. You'd have thought lessons would have been learnt, but it hasn't happened at all. Now the question is, they've got to bounce back in their next game, and you know, they're up against a side which are in a better shape from what they went through last season in Nottingham Forest. They're going to be a little bit more organised, because I'm sure that the coach, and everyone knows he's a good coach as well, would definitely be more organised from what he was last season. When last season he started a nightmare, he was a poor man. He had a poor man's Chelsea squad, really, didn't he? Just a load of names and didn't know what to do with them. So there is, interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing how Ten Hag is going to turn this around. But he has to be cruel to be kind. I think he's made a rod for his back. I don't think he could do a lot about it, because he could have caused more problems. But by making Fernandes captain, because I think sometimes he might need to sit and watch for a while and understand, and ask himself questions about himself and how he conducts himself. When you're looking at leadership, the incident where he got booked had nothing really to do with him. He'd done his bit by going to Anthony and calming him down, because he got booked.
And then he went and got booked himself.
Yeah, so I'm kind of thinking, what you're doing? So there is still, again, it's another learning process for the manager. And he's got to maybe be a little bit more harder and make more tough decisions, because there was a few times his substitutions were a little bit funny, a little bit weird. But I do look at it and think about when he's standing out there and he turns around and he looks at his bench, and you expect it to be quality on the bench. Maybe it's not the quality that you would expect of benches United, but he looks behind and he'll ask himself the question, who out of them is going to really give me 100%? When you're turning round, and you're looking, and then you're having to bring on Martial, you're kind of going, you're going like that.
Yeah. Well, Keane made the comment in the after the game that it was like bringing on Frank Stapleton, and it was like a color of a line, really, and you can understand what he means by that, because he's basically saying Martial should be resigned to. We should have already moved on from that for everyone's benefit, really. And it's a good point. And I think that, to me, we was it the first podcast of the season when we were all talking about the scheduling of the fixture calendar, and it didn't make any sense that it'd been 2-3 weeks, really, because there's plenty of time. Like, for example, if United were playing against Forest on Wednesday night, this kind of scenario, which I'm about to propose to you, Paul, would feel much more natural. But you've got a week building up, and it's going to look a lot more drastic because of the lack of requirement or the lack of necessity to do it. So there's a week's rest, so you would presume there's no need to make any changes whatsoever. But if the game was on Wednesday, if Ten Hag went into this game against Forest and then said, we're going to play Palestri on the right. So I'm just looking at Johnny's comment, and I'm taking it from this. So he says, I feel Anthony should be dropped for Palestri or Sancho. Seems better through the middle at the moment. That's a fair comment. And Garnacho dropped and put Rashford on the left and try a youngster centre forward. Let's say Hoyland was fit to play the game on Forest, and let's say it's on Wednesday. If you then Palestri on the right, maybe put Dalot right back and put Eriksen in midfield instead of Mount, and put Hoyland through the middle and put Rashford to the left. You made 4 or 5 changes there. And it's not necessarily dropping Mason Mount. It's just freshening the side up. Whereas if that happens on Saturday, a few questions might be asked. He's made 4 or 5 changes from the previous game because of the nature of the defeat, when it didn't need to be like that. It still doesn't need to be like that, because he could still make those changes. That's just the way that it will be perceived from the outside. Nonetheless, Paul, do you think that that's the way that perhaps he should do it? Maybe make those 4 or 5 changes, because they're not necessarily bad ones to make, because Palestri probably deserves a chance. Even if it's not necessarily saying Anthony's playing poorly, but Palestri deserves the minutes. Give him the minutes. Eriksen needs minutes. Give him the minutes. Hoyland obviously would need to start. And then maybe giving Dalot a chance at right back. I mean, he made those 3, 4 or 5 changes. And then it's not necessarily dropping players. It's kind of rotating the squad and making the best out of it.
Are you saying that with a mid... Because if there was a midweek game, is that what you're bouncing off, yeah?
Well, I mean, he made the changes anyway. But I'm just talking about the outside reception to that. Like, so if the game was played on Wednesday, then people wouldn't be saying, "Oh, he's dropped Mount, he's done this, he's done that." But with a week's build-up, there's no need to rest anyone. There's no need to rotate. They'll be saying he's dropped Anthony, he's dropped Mount, that kind of thing.
Yeah. My bit is that if I was Ten Hag, I'd be worried because he's put everything in to get Mount. I'd be worried about doing that, really making that decision on him straight away, because of just his feeling of coming up where he's come from and just how it affects him to suddenly being put into that position of being left out and how that could affect him in that sense. That bit will concern me, but that's the manager's choice. He's got to make that decision. But going back to where you started this, and because of my background and my life, playing third division football and then jumping to the top division from the third division and then seeing what these lower division sides have to endure during the season, championship and below. Where was I last week? I was at Queen's Park Rangers last week. I was working at Rangers v Norwich. So as soon as they played on a Saturday, on the Wednesday night, they're playing a game against Norwich in the League Cup. And then they played Saturday as well. So you're talking about 2-3 midweeks in the Premier League. I keep on about, why don't they play a game in it? Why don't they do it early? Everyone just had a pre-season to get themselves going. What is it? What's wrong in actually putting the game in now? Especially maybe the sides that are in the Champions League. To put a game in there. It's as simple as that. And it's going too far now. They keep moaning later on. Do your work early and then you'll have space to jig later on. You'll be able to then, the Premier League could suddenly go, someone has a whinge up about it. More than likely it'll be Klopp. When things ain't going right for him, he'd want it. I'll tell you what, shut up and have that. And we'll make it easier for you. Now will you leave us alone, please, Mr. Klopp? What is wrong with playing, Saturday, Tuesday or Saturday, Wednesday? I really don't understand it. And again, me having my little mini rant about how the game has got soft. It's amazing. We was doing it, paid well, but we was just given games and we played. No manager moaned, no players ever moaned, but now they're given more money in the game and off the pitch as well. And they want to play less minutes for it. What a life that is now to be able to do that. And then you can moan about it on social media, and you get all these idiots who jump on any bandwagon to back them because they're worried about offending anybody. But no one backs the man who works in the factory. No one backs the people who work in the offices and having to go through mental bits of working in an office to back them to get more money because they're having to work longer hours. But we've got to back footballers now because they're tired and they're putting their bodies in the line because of the fact that Premier League are asking them to play more game, body on the line. Well, the line isn't too bad. Even then, you look at it here, you go, I've had enough of this in the Premier League. I'm going to jump on a plane and go and play in Saudi and get more money and play less minutes. Not too bad. So that's my little rant over about that. But the long and short of it, if the game was on Wednesday, what you've said there is absolutely spot on. No one would talk about it, without a doubt. They'll go past them. Because they say he's resting and whatever, but because there's a long period of time between, it'll be another inquiry into Manchester United. Any other team do it, there wouldn't be a story.
Yeah.
I just want to jump in there, but it's such a simple fix, and Paul mentioned it on the very first show. You front load. That's what you do. This is when the players are at their fittest and is when it's at their highest peak. You front load the games. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous that we go into April and clubs are having to stretch out the 7 days to try and fit in 3 games or in some cases 4 games. I mean, there was that time United played 2 games, 2 days in a row. I mean, it's been going on for decades now and it makes absolutely no sense. And now, correct me if I'm wrong, do we still have the Christmas break just after Christmas where they shut it down for a couple of weeks or is that gone?
In February, yeah. Is that so?
I mean, that just makes no sense at all either. It's like front load it all. And then if you want to give that break in February, okay, you've already played 3 or 4 games at that stage of the season than you did the previous season because you front loaded. There's absolutely zero reason for not front loading games. And it you know, like Paul said, it just, that's when the players are at their fittest, and that's when the, you know, that's when you're not going to get those little niggling injuries. You're going to get them at the end of the season. You know, that's when most teams lose their better players. Now, obviously, you know, we've had a few ACLs in the past few weeks. For me, I think it's just coincidental. But if you front load this season, and think about it, we would have been four games in if we had to play two midweek games. Four games in right now. Instead, we're two games in, and we're going to be chasing our tails. And the most successful teams are the ones that suffer the most, because they play the most games. If we had a front load a lot of them games, we wouldn't be having this situation later on in the season. I'm a big fan of the League Cup. I'm a huge fan of the FA Cup. I don't think any of them need to be rejigged. What needs to be rejigged is the Premier League. That's what needs to be rejigged, not these cup competitions. These cup competitions are the lifeblood for a lot of these clubs in the lower divisions. They don't need to be rejigged. Nothing of that needs to be rejigged. The Premier League needs to be rejigged. They're not going to do what would ultimately, you know, reduce games, and that is reduce teams, because the rule is every single club has to vote yes. You're not going to get, no disrespect, you're not going to get the likes of Sheffield United, Nottingham Forest, clubs like that, you know, Southampton when they're up. They're not going to vote, oh, yeah, we want to reduce it to 18 teams. They're not taking that risk. Not a chance. So the FA need to step up, and they need to actually say, okay, all these weeks where we have an empty Wednesday, we're going to throw a game in there. And trust me, by Christmas, we'll be six games more down the road than we normally are. And then you won't have this absolute fixture mess at the end of the year. It's a simple fix. It really is.
Have you quite finished? Guys?
I'm done.
Are you sure? Got it all off? All right. All out.
Let's move on. Let's move on. By the way, this is a cool suggestion. I was just jumping on the back of it, so, you know.
I'm glad that you both enjoyed Monday morning's therapy session, but we are coming to an hour, and I have to go off the clock, 11 o'clock. So, yeah, really appreciate your time this morning, guys. If you've watched the pod live on YouTube, feel free to subscribe and like. It really helps the channel. Share on social platforms as well. Really, really appreciate that. If you've listened back on the audio podcast and you've enjoyed Paul and Dave running. I mean, I never ran, so I don't know why these guys just suddenly decided to do that for the last 15 minutes. But yeah, it's what it is. If you've enjoyed it, you can review us on the audio platform you're listening on as well. We'll be back next week. In fact, I'll be back on Friday night with Phil, and hopefully Lee will be joining us for the first time this season. Maybe even Dave, if he can be bothered, because he'll be with me. So maybe he'll just send me to do it by myself. We shall see. But we'll be back to preview Forest with a different panel. And Paul, Dave and I will be back next Monday to hopefully talk about a successful squad rotation that's gone under the radar, and maybe even assigning a couple of these major issues dealt with, so we can actually talk about them. We'll be back next week, guys. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And stay safe. Stay well.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.